to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
If you're drowning and I throw you a life jacket, would you grab it? Yes. Good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns.
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know that.
That's it. I'm done.
Welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Holly. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures are down $47. This is not good this morning. We have issues with flu. We've got, mostly I guess that would be the one, issues with the flu. But we also have Mr. Kevin O'Neill and we have Mr. John Flanagan, because obviously we have an awful lot of big news this morning that most of it not very good. Morning, gentlemen.
Good morning,
Good
Tom.
Morning. What an all-star cast.
Yeah, this is...
I'm honored.
It doesn't get any better than this. I just thought John was calling in early, and then with the all the Kobe news, which is obviously horrendous, thought maybe Kevin is our basketball expert. I wanted to call in, and he has. Pretty sad stuff, huh, guys?
Yeah, it's you know it's one of these defining moments for a lot of people who, you know, Bryant was such a fixture on you know, the international stage, and it was a class act, and when he's gone so suddenly, you know, people really can't absorb it. So, you see these, pictures of people gathering at his home or, where the crash occurred. This is one of these, great media stars who left way too early, and people are kind of shell-shocked by it.
Well, yeah, I remember him, sort of remember him being drafted, of course. You know, we had Michael Jordan here, and he was the brash kid who got drafted right out of high school, and he kind of got kicked around a little bit when he was younger, but then he became obviously a spectacular athlete and also seriously grew as a person, and he got into some other stuff. He got the movie he had, was it last year or the year before? So, I mean, he clearly was spending his time on other things and had an awful lot of time for his family, and that thing yesterday, God, it grew like a weed. I heard about it like 11:25. I was driving around and was it X? What's the sports report? XZ Radio or XZ something something? Was the first to report it.
TMZ.
TMZ was the first to report it. And then it was four people. Then you read and survived by the family and blah, blah, blah. None of the family was with him. And all of a sudden the daughter was with him. And all of a sudden it's nine people. I'm thinking, God, this thing keeps growing all day. It's worse and worse. As bad as it was.
Yeah, it did. And, it's funny. And I mentioned this in email you may have seen that in the morning, I heard the report that LeBron had passed him on the all-time scoring list.
Yep.
And I don't know why I thought this way, but, Kobe really has kind of been out of the limelight for a while, and then, a few hours later, this is what we get. If you just look at him as just the basketball player, what an incredible career, 18-time All-Star, just an absolutely remarkable basketball player. And in many ways, he was another version of Michael Jordan because, he was that, that competitor that, if his mother tried to guard him, he'd throw an elbow. He would do whatever he needed to do to win, that at times was accused of being a selfish player, much like Jordan, but also was a guy who had to carry his team, who had in many cases he for some years he was the team, and then you get the off the court Kobe, which was a different kind of complication, but I think a story of a guy who could be a little immature in his younger years, like most people, and grew up.
Yep.
And really, and became, became a real worthwhile leader in his organization, as well as somebody that where you really could point to him and say, what a nice what an admirable guy in many ways. You can't know 100% what's going on with some of the people who are in the limelight. you know the public persona, but the public persona became pretty darn good.
Well, the whole idea, I mean, I'm guessing if you could talk to him today, he would probably say that getting drafted into the NBA is, and out of high school, whether or not you're capable of playing basketball at that level is almost like a sidelight. I mean, I would say you have no business piling onto a team where every single night they're going to some club and the women are throwing themselves at you. I mean, I don't know anybody who piled out of high school is ready for that. I mean,
I wouldn't have been ready for that until I was too old and the women would start looking at all the other people.
Last week? You ready last week? You ready last week? But I'm saying there's a whole, it's not like it's a football team where you can bury yourself with the younger guys. I mean, you imagine being like 18 years old on a team with like Dennis Rodman on it or something. I mean,
you know, as an example, he had that, the sexual assault accusation and he was exonerated on that. But the defense was that it was consensual and he was a married man and that was I'm sure a very, very difficult time in his personal life. What did he be, how did it end? Traveling with his daughter to play basketball. What became his reputation? All the publicity built around, Arike Ogunbowale becoming a big fan of his. And then he was at the games, at the women's playoff games, not because of her, but because of his daughters. Because he wanted to promote women's basketball because he had daughters playing basketball. The family considerations got to be front and center for him. And then, as those two paths crossed, that was a little moment in the limelight a couple of years ago, that was actually kind of touching. I like a good story of redemption. I really do.
Well, nothing could redeem you probably more than four daughters pushing you around.
I wouldn't know, cause I only have one pushing me around.
I think it starts to become geometric after a while. Well, again, it's a horrible thing, but the thing of it is, it's not just horrible for him, it's horrible for the other eight people. The odd part is, I just had, talk about something out of the blue, you guys. I had dinner Saturday night with two guys and their wives, when Audrey came with, obviously, in the bustling town of Stegra, Illinois, with two guys I worked with from Pullman that I literally had not seen in 40 years. And it was like nothing ever changed, but it is amazing how if you're talking about good people, it's like us going back to school and seeing somebody we haven't seen in 45 years. But one of the guys was had been, and up until a couple of years ago, because he's got to be 70, was a pilot, and all we talked about Saturday night, we talked about a bunch of stuff, but was pilot and pilot safety and how much at every level. I mean, he actually was telling me a story about how. I said, did you ever get checked out on complex aircraft? And he said, yeah. Complex aircraft means if you have wheels that go down, okay, and come up, obviously, and hopefully go back down, or a multiple pitch prop or something like that, that now becomes a complex aircraft, rather than just fixed prop and wheels down, you can't screw them up kind of thing. So on his first flight, he takes off in Midway, and sure enough, one of the wheels won't go down. This is his first time ever. So he's reaching over, trying to fly the thing, and he's got the crank, and he cranks it down. We said, well, of course, they won't let you land back at Midway like that in a private plane. You got to find somewhere else. So he ends up landing in Frankfurt, and he has to, like, call the owner of the plane, say, come get your plane. So the people from where this was a checkout flight, so I guess he had an instructor with him, and they said, well, since, like, the worst thing that could happen in a multiple-engine plane happened, and you got through it and landed it, I guess you check out. Okay. Manny
now,
and I were talking.
Now, can you fly like a normal person?
Well, yeah. Well, Manny and I were talking on the way in about how he said it was weird because he put the wheels down and he couldn't control the plane. I think he wanted to turn to the left. He's going, "What the hell's wrong?" The instructor goes, "What's wrong is one of the wheels didn't go down. Oops!" And because he said it's really hard to them because they're not in the middle. One's on one side. He goes, the drag is on the one side. So you really had to pull it back, you know, toward the other way until you got the other wheel down. Then it's even. But Manny and I were talking on the way in. I don't know if you guys read all the details on the flight of this thing. And evidently, they took off L.A., and they circled downtown for a while because they get permission from, from a air traffic person that they could continue their flight because evidently there were foggy conditions and because they were in a helicopter or lower and blah, blah, blah. And I think they just whacked right into this mountain because some an eyewitness guy saying when he came through the town, we thought there was a helicopter a little bit low, wonder where he's landing, and all of a sudden he wasn't landing. They turned toward the mountain and whacked right in the middle of the thing. And one thing I learned from this guy when I was at Pullman is that when you leave the ground, say at Midway and you're heading to Rockford or someplace, you know every airport along the way should you have problems. You don't, if something goes wrong with the plane, you don't say, gee, where can I land? I mean, the amount of preparation these people have, and I have to believe the guy flying this thing, we're talking about a double screw Sikorsky, right? That's like a military air with 9 people. And this guy, this was not his first rodeo. I mean, we're talking about...
Right, and I did hear somebody report that it was that the helicopter was rated to fly in zero visibility.
Well, but yeah, but not in the mountains.
Whether the pilot was or not is another issue. Now, that doesn't mean that the visibility isn't the problem. I'm just saying it wasn't a total boondoggle here.
Right. Oh, yeah, and I wonder what combination of, should we keep going or was it right when they needed it? The motors didn't give them the pop? I'm guessing it's probably that because I can't imagine, Kobe being turned into a pretty down-to-earth dude with his daughter on there saying, go ahead if it's safe, or the pilot. I mean, those guys don't do that stuff.
No.
I mean,
it sounded like there were eyewitnesses who reported an engine that sounded like it was in distress. I don't know if it was misfiring or, but they thought it was, doing the right thing somehow. I was surprised when I heard the thing was built in 1991.
What else has it been forever?
The state of Illinois had owned it for all those years. And, I'm just naive about aviation, but I don't think I would be comfortable getting on the Dan Ryan in a car built in 1991 and driving at a top speed unless I was absolutely sure.
Hey, you were just in my truck. You were just in my truck.
Oh, that was that. I felt perfectly safe in that, Tom.
Yeah, I'd feel perfectly safe in the truck. The driver, on the other hand, might worry me.
Well, yeah. we had a guy, talk about weird stories, this kind of connotes. We had a guy that came to one of our seminars and talk about things crossing subject lines. He was from Texas, had nothing but money. Played for guess who, Kevin?
Darrell.
And, of course, he was regaling us with stories as we plied him with booze about how everybody on the team had, like, their guy that took care of him. So he goes to a pro camp, plays in one exhibition game. He's on a special teams kickoff. Realize how hard guys are whacking into guys, and he goes, this isn't for me. He goes, I was 6'4", 225. I was not pro material, so I quit. So I call up my guy, and I say, I want to go to law school. He goes, why do you want to do that? You never wanted to study when you were here. Well, somehow he weaseled a little money, more money out of the guy, goes to law school, becomes, I don't know what he bought, but he has all this money, and he's a helicopter pilot. And he was talking about how safe it is to fly helicopters, and if the thing conks out, you can auto-rotate down easier than you can glide an airplane down, which who knows if that's true or not. But I wonder, can you auto-rotate down a helicopter that has two thingies?
Rotors,
I mean, I don't know. It's a good question.
Yeah, good question, way outside of my expertise.
I mean, this guy was claiming that...
even speculate on an answer. John, I don't know if you have any thoughts.
No. I mean, I think this is about, I think the top flight aircraft to be flying in a metropolitan area. So I just wonder about the age. I was wondering the same thing when the space shuttle was going up in the air when it was almost 20 years old. There's a different kind of tolerance, I guess, when you get to travel at that level, but it certainly isn't something that somebody traveling on the ground would feel all that safe in.
They've got people,
something that old.
John, they got people flying around in Piper Cubs from the 50s. They just keep,
yeah, I believe
you
it.
Know,
I
just
believe
keep redoing
it.
The motor when they need to. And I mean, some of these airplanes, The airplane might have how many thousand takeoff and landings? It might be on its fourth set of motors. I mean, they, you know, the maintenance is pretty. The thing you have to worry about is the compression and that compression of the inside. You know, how many where the skin has the issue, but you can just replace motors. But I wonder, for anybody doesn't know, supposedly a helicopter conks out. You don't just drop like a rock. If the man knows what he's doing, and you keep the thing straight up and down, the rotors will still move from side to side because of the airflow going down, and they will make your descent quite a bit slower than if you just fell, right? Isn't that the idea?
Yeah.
Now, whether or not you land gently or you crack pretty good, I don't know, but allegedly this guy claimed that he had like a 90% chance of getting one down if it conked. So I don't know if he was a little bit of an ego, but still. But obviously that didn't happen to these poor guys. They were there pretty quick, and it said it was just, no survivors right away, which is pretty awful. So anyway, that's where that all is. Now we've got, 2,800 cases in China, death tolls 81. So the futures are now at 45 points. So can we think of a worse Monday starting out here? We have five.
Let me see. What could make it worse? From a market standpoint, any causes for that, Tom? What do you think's behind it?
Well, we were starting to turn a little bit last week anyway, but this thing. I mean, nobody knows where this is going to go. Probably it'll probably go nowhere. That a month from now, the thing will be contained and everything will be all right. But I personally don't seem that worried about it because it looks like the people they're getting, as long as you get them under medical care, they all survive, at least so far. The people here, we got, five cases now here? Six?
Five, I heard last night.
Yeah. And,
yeah. Now, we've also sent a plane to evacuate people.
Well, I got to believe
that report. I don't know if that's, U.S. employees, government employees. I am not sure who all's supposed to get on that, but that'll be an interesting flight all the way from China. Keep your, and have your breathing mask on.
I think that there's going to be people taking people's temperatures and everything all the way back, and I'll bet that thing does not land at O'Hare. I'll bet it lands somewhere where they can keep an eye on people for a day or two.
Right, at a base somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, is the right, obviously the right thing to do. I mean, it's not like our people don't know what the hell they're doing. Most, a lot of them do. Some seems like they don't, but I mean, now that we're talking about just the amount of people over there, they're talking about how many masks they need. And of course, now they don't have masks, they don't have enough thermometers, so they're pulling them in from other parts of the country. But you never, just the size of these places. I've never been there, so I don't. The idea that there's like three cities pretty close to each other, all of them are like four times the size of Chicago, or five or six, is kind of. It seems.
I saw a report about trying to put up a 1,000-bed hospital in a week. That's an interesting undertaking.
Well, obviously they watch MASH, right?
Oh, it's going to be tense. Okay.
Well, how quick do these? Remember the.
Seriously, what an undertaking. It does show that when there's an emergency, sometimes we can do incredible things. We human beings can do incredible things, and then other times you think we could. Let me see. I'm trying to find a less vulgar way of saying this. Screw up the easiest things. Let's just put it that way.
Well, we fought World War II in two fronts in 3.5 years, and it's going to take 10 years to fix the Jane Burner interchange.
Yep.
So, figure that one out, Lucy. But I, if this thing ever gets to the point where, what is the infrastructure you need? Well, how much money did the guy make who made, remember he used to play basketball, Kevin, down at St. Bernadette's?
Yeah.
That was a Quonset hut. And if you watch any of the World War II movies, what were on every single island in the South Pacific were nothing but Quonset huts, right?
They were Quonset huts, yeah, they were. And you had the you talk about innovation on the fly. The Leavitt brothers were the ones who developed the construction techniques so that they could have an air base up as soon as land was taken anywhere, in either the South Pacific or in Europe.
that you know, within a couple of days you'd have a fully functioning airbase up and running. And they actually took that that expertise back to the United States after the war, and that was where the Levittown homes, you know, the cookie cutter homes, if you remember the song Little Boxes.
Yep.
They were mass producing neighborhoods.
Well, the joke at the
technology.
Well, the airport thing.
Technology is not the right word. The same techniques.
Well, the airport thing. That's what Audrey's dad did in the Pacific Theater. He was a runway guy, and because before the war he'd worked on the Trans Canada Highway, the one from Vancouver up all the way to Alaska. So mm-hmm. he knew about roads, and they plunked him right down, and that's kind of what he did. But Matty, have you ever seen a Quonset hut?
Not in person.
Well, the one.
I bet you have, Matt.
I bet you have.
I don't know what it is.
And if you want to play ball, it's the same
place. If you look up a Quonset hut image online, you'll find one that say, "Oh, those. That's a Quonset hut, huh?"
Essentially, it's a slab of concrete where you put these metal ribs that go from side to side, so it looks like the ribs of an elephant going around in a semicircle.
Yeah, I've seen it.
And then they just wrap a metal around it and put the heat at one end, and they can be amazingly sterile. I mean, they use them for operating things during a war, right, Kevin? I mean, it can be because mm-hmm. you've got a concrete floor.
You don't see these that often anymore, but I have seen it before.
Yeah, I mean, but the
I didn't even know how to spell it, let alone what it
Q,
was.
Q-U-O.
Well, I found it now.
Yeah.
But.
And if you ever go down to see Hoover Dam, which, of course, in Vegas, you're always in the saloon, you know, but I'm just saying. If you go through the town of Boulder City, they've all these little houses, and, of course, they've probably been remodeled, but the joke there was you went to work and couldn't find your house because there were two empty lots next to you, and then there were two houses when you came home. And they built that in how long, Kevin? It was like they built the whole city for people working at the dams. And they had, you know, had 15 guys would essentially pour a slab, and it must have been some sort of prefab, but yeah. They were all the same. Everything was the same size. Toilets were all the same. You come home and like, hey, there's a house here. And I'm sure it wasn't totally finished, but it probably was livable in, what, a week maybe? And,
sure. And we went through somewhat the same kind of process in North Dakota a few years ago when the oil boom happened, and they went from nothing to, you know, a lot of people were living in mobile homes temporarily, but you know, when there was that big oil boom and all the jobs were there, you know, say, you know, 7-8 years ago, and so many people were out of work elsewhere, that there was a mass migration there, and the construction industry just met the demand.
You mean the four of us got tired of living in the 20-roll Winnebago?
It would have been fine, but for the smell.
Yes. Well, but the good news is, two would have been working 12 hours on one shift, and then the other two the other shift. I mean, that was the beauty of, talk about, if you guys remember the building 1E, Scott? Oh, it's still
oh, yeah.
there. Well, that place wouldn't. Before the city was, I would say, I'll use the term gentrified, the only place that anybody would let their single daughter, or even son for that matter, live alone, you know, away from home was basically Clark and Division. That's why all the bars were there. And because you had the L stop right there, and you had the, bus at the what's the name of the place? It was the East and West.
What was the Division?
No, what was the big hotel there? Where the pump room was in one side.
Oh, the Ambassador East.
Yeah. Well, the bus to the airport would stop there and away from downtown. So every stewardess in the world lived in 1A Scott. And it was all studios, and they basically hot bunked because somebody was out of town virtually all the time. And so when they were both there, I don't know, one found a boyfriend or they had a cot or what, but, place was, you know, it was the same sort of thing. And there was more people there than actually lived in the place. But Kevin, before we, Let you slide. There's really nothing more to say about this. There was a high school coach and his wife and daughter in there too, a baseball coach.
A teammate. You know, they were traveling for basketball, and so one of his daughter's teammates and a parent were there. Yes, there was a high school coach. They still haven't identified everybody who was on the flight.
Well, that's seven.
So there's still more to come. I don't know that any of them will be, you know, famous people or limelight people, but tragic nonetheless. But you know, as you think of Kobe Bryant, just think of that ultimate competitor. that meant taking over the game, that meant taking over the game. But I think, you know, there was a point in his career where, you know, where he learned to share a little bit more, much like Jordan. He had the famous feud with Shaquille O'Neal, but they seemed to come to terms later on, which, you know, is probably nice that, that regret isn't hanging out, in the ether. So, you know, I think, like I said, I like a good story of redemption. I like a story of, you know, someone growing up, and I think that's the Kobe Bryant story, is a gifted guy whose personal life caught up to his basketball life.
Yeah, it really did. I mean, what a good-looking family. And you have to wonder, I mean, I'm going to lob this one out there, but we'll tell you what, we'll leave this for John and Maddie. SP Futures down 45, Dow Futures down 404. Kevin, thank you very much, buddy. Talk to you on Wednesday.
Take it easy, Kevin.
NASDAQ Futures down 162. This is ugly. We'll talk about more about that when we come back. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Harrell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708 708- 408-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right
now. Welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures down on 45 last night. I had a feeling they were going to be way down. They were down 33, and they came back to being down maybe 27. But now we've reloaded to the downside, somewhat unfortunately. NASDAQ down 159, that's a lot. And we have the Dow down 378. Individual stocks in the Dow, I mean, every stock in the Dow is down. The only one stock in the transportation average up. Basically, every stock that is trading in the Dow. Notables, Home Depot down 366, Goldman Sachs down 472. Caterpillar down 341. Now they have earnings this week. Apple, which also has earnings this week, is down 651. Clearly they got China issues. Boeing is down 465. So McDonald's down 334. I mean, anything that's got people moving around, because I read many, I don't know if it's what you saw, but the travel in China last week was down 28% from last year as they enter their lunar holiday. So what year is it, Manny?
I'm not sure what year it is.
Okay, it might be the rat.
I'll look positive. Up real quick.
Anyway, so let's do what's going on in the rest of the world. Now, of course, the Lunar New Year, the Chinese markets are closed this week, so I suppose that's a good thing. DAX down 286, 2.1%. FTSE down 155.
You are correct, by the way. It is the year of the rat.
What year are you? What are you supposed to be?
I'm a bad one. I can't remember what it is.
A bad one?
Like, not one that's cool. Like, I'm not the dragon or anything. I'm like the, let me find it here. I'm the pig.
Is that bad?
Well, I don't want to be a pig, do you?
Well, I'm a dragon. Why would I want to be a pig?
Exactly. If I was the tiger or the dragon or, the snake, that would be cool. You don't want to be the pig or the rat.
God. FTSE down 155, 2%. CAC around now 124. It is 2% as well. Over in Asia, the only one that's doing anything today, I mean, what I'm saying doing anything is trading, is the Nikkei. That's down 483. That's another 2%. Bonds, 1.62 on the U.S. 10-year, so they're going as you might expect. But a flight to quality on the bonds. Bunds minus 0.36. Japan down to minus 0.04 as they were slightly up there for a while, going the other way. Oil down $1.45, 52.74. So ouch on that. Brent down 168. These guys were like 60 before the Iran situation. Natural gas bounced a little bit though, 5 cents, 194. Are we seeing a bad forecast somewhere, Matty? I don't see it outside. RBOB 145, wow. Gold, I'm gonna say way up. Gold is up 8 bucks. It was up 13 last night, so it's only up 8 now. 1580, silver up 13 cents, 1825. Matty, what do you got? Traffic, weather, and sports? Other news besides the horrible news?
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. Off to a good start on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. No issues coming in on the Edens. Kennedy, a little bit of a slowdown near O'Hare, but no issues further inland. Eisenhower looking good. Stevenson traffic starting to build around Cicero, but that's looking good overall, too. Southside expressways are all quiet. Off the expressways, there's a crash out in Elmhurst, Grand Avenue at Lake Street. There is an accident. West of there, Summit Street at Illinois 25, which is North Liberty Street out in the western suburbs, there is an accident. And then some flooding that's been going on over the last several days. Archer Avenue between Route 83 and Willow Springs Road is closed due to flooding and has been over the weekend because of a lot of, obviously, snow melt down there that's causing that. But everything else looking good out there. Weather today, it's going to be a relatively mild day. Overcast skies, but a high of 36. Right now it's cloudy and 29 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 74 today. Right now it's mostly clear and 53. In sports, obviously a very sad day yesterday as Lakers legend Kobe Bryant passed away at age 41. He was a 5-time NBA champion, 2-time finals MVP, 18-time All-Star, 11-time first-team All-NBA. and of course a legendary player. He also won an Academy Award and was a pretty interesting guy off the court. His daughter passed away. One of his four daughters, Gianna, was on the helicopter too that went down in Calabasas, California, outside of Los Angeles, and seven others were aboard. So just a horrific incident that we've
had. There might be a lesson there to you. If you have four daughters, you better think you're going to keep working.
Yeah, that's a good point. On the court, every NBA team honored the legendary Kobe Bryant by opening the game with a shot clock violation, 24-second shot clock violation by each team in honor of number 24, Kobe. So that was a pretty emotional thing that every team did, and the Bulls plan to do something similar like that when they honor Kobe tonight. Suns were in action. They lost 114-109 to the Grizzlies. College hoops, Loyola lost in overtime at Northern Iowa, 67-62. Northwestern lost at home to Ohio State, 71-59. I would encourage everyone to watch Chris Collins' post-game press conference from after the game. He was very close with Kobe Bryant. He was an assistant coach on Team USA, and both of their dads were teammates on the 76ers, and so they kind of grew up together close in age, and he was very emotional after the game, and it's worth watching. Chief.
Well, as usual, hey, Jan, I always have a different view of the world than most people. I don't know what makes me goofy, I guess, but I'm sadder more not from we lost a great basketball player, is the way the man was evolving. I think he would have done more the rest part of his life than his last part.
I agree with you, Tom. I mean, what Kevin was saying, I absolutely agree with. You know, initially he seemed like a brash kid who was kind of overcompensating, you know, given his age when he came in to the NBA. And I always thought he had Jordan's, you know, kind of tendency to take over and not a team player. And that always kind of kept me at arm's length about him. And I remember being struck after a couple of years teaching out in the south suburbs, and when I would assign English 101 assignments about people who were role models for students, you know, things, people that you looked up to and things about them you admired, and I would get them to develop these into 3 or 4 page essays, and I was absolutely stunned at how many students of all different backgrounds would write about Kobe Bryant. So I kind of went back and looked at him again, because I'd kind of put him aside as a, you know, a flashy player who you really wouldn't want on your team if you wanted a strong team connection among all the players. And I began to see what they were talking about and where his appeal really, you know, lay for these people. And I began to change my thinking about him, and especially since he's retired. I think he's really kind of distinguished himself as a, you know, a family guy, a guy who really was a role model in ways I never, you know, began to appreciate until after he was out of the limelight. And the things he could have done for the sport, for kids, for parents, you know, as a role model of how you do it and how you evolve and, you know, you kind of become what you didn't think you had any chance of being early on. He had all the gifts as a sports player, but he really grew as a person, and that's, of course, I think more important. And we've lost that, and there's not enough of that in professional sports to begin with.
Well, we also lost three young kids.
You have limelight like him, like he was, and they're gone. They don't come around that often.
No. Plus, we lost three young kids on this flight too.
Oh, that's, you know, I mean, it's wonderfully appropriate, but it's horrific that he was on his way to his daughter's basketball practice. I mean, what every dad would sympathize with that, and every child would sympathize with that child, and vice versa, doing what a good, you know, observant father does, and staying involved in their lives, and that just breaks your heart.
Well, it could just easily have been a car crash or a van crash. We've seen those.
And to be with your family member and whoever the other people were on that flight, he wasn't just, you know, doing it on some, you know, star tour or, yeah, you know, just goofing off. He was on a fatherly task.
This is not without history behind it. I mean, Newt Rackney went down on a plane. I mean, Thurman Munson. Who's a golfer, Manny? Payne Stewart.
Payne Stewart, yeah.
The entire Evansville basketball team, right?
Yeah, Clemente. I mean, it's just this whole bunch of,
yeah, Roberto Clemente, and we had, but I mean, it just is not. unfounded. It's horrible every time it happens. What was the, wasn't somebody's entire skating team or gymnastic team went down, an Olympic team?
I heard, I read something yesterday, and I need to confirm it, so I probably shouldn't even say it, but I'll just say it anyway, and then I'll confirm it. Somebody tweeted yesterday, this is only the third ever NBA MVP to die. And they've been giving out the award since 1956, and only three NBA MVPs have died. It's like an exclusive club, and for whatever reason, all the old-timers and all these guys are still living.
Well, Wilt's dead. Really? He had to be an MVP.
So I'm gonna look it up to confirm that's the case, but that's kind of remarkable in its own right.
When they didn't start giving out that in 1956, so...
That's what I read, yeah.
So if guys were 30 then, hell, that's still 60 years ago. Those guys got to be getting up there. Well, Bill Russell's still alive, right?
Yeah.
Well, why don't you check that out? Because there's got to be a few guys in there.
That's a remarkable statistic, boys.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they did the 55-56 season was the first year they gave out the MVP award. Bob Pettit won it.
He's dead.
Bob Cousy won it the second time.
He's dead.
Bill Russell won it a bunch of times.
Yeah, he's around.
Then Wilt won it.
Wilt's dead.
Then Oscar Robertson.
He's still with us.
Wes Unseld.
He's still with us.
Willis Reed.
Didn't he just die?
Kareem.
He's still with us.
So I'm going to have to see who's living and who's dead here. And then you got like Dave Cowens and Bob McAdoo and Bill Walton and Moses Malone, who passed away.
Yeah.
So we'll have to see what this list actually looks like.
I'm going
to
say it's more like seven that are dead, just from you reading them off.
Yeah. And then Dr. J, who's still alive, Larry Bird, Magic, and then you get into the Jordan, Barkley, Hakeem, all those guys. But yeah, let me look and see what the number is here and see how accurate that is.
Well, wasn't there a whole skating team or something that went down, Jan?
Yeah, I can't remember which Olympics it was where they were either about to appear or had just appeared. I'll have to go back and poke around, but it was, you know, a devastating thing.
Bob Pettit, still alive, by
really?
The way.
Really? Wow.
He won the first one, so that's
how old is he?
He's 87.
Right.
That's the first one I looked up. So I'll finalize this, but I read that, and it seemed crazy to me, but I mean,
Maybe they're right.
I don't doubt it. We'll look.
Well, so John, what of this carnage that has the market down this much here this morning, mostly having to do, I think, with the SARS. What do you think if anything, on a political front, that tape of the dinner in the Trump Hotel that went out Saturday and went viral, what do you think that has anything to do with this?
I don't think so, Tom. I was expecting, you know, that there would be some kind of shift once Trump's lawyers got the, you know, podium in the impeachment hearings and the, you know, witness vote comes up, you know, this week, and that would have some sort of shift one way or the other. I don't think it's anything like what's happening in China. And, you know, the Hong Kong protests are continuing still.
They're in a back burner. That's like, you don't worry about those, you don't worry about Ukraine, you don't worry about Venezuela, you don't worry about banks going down in the Argentina or any other place. All that's back burner stuff. You got to figure out what's front burner and back burner. That's back burner.
Yeah.
Even though it's very important, it could jump to the front burner and blow up the stove any time. Right.
Well, then there was a mortar attack on the embassy in Baghdad over the weekend, and I don't think they've got any sense of whose mortars those were, you know, where they came from, whether this is some delayed retaliation for the Soleimani killing, or
what if they say made in USA on them?
Well, then, you know, there'll be some congressional hearings into that too, I'm sure.
Well,
who the heck got hold of these?
Wasn't there a time when if you got shot anywhere in the world, you had like an 80% chance a bullet was made here or something? I mean, you know. But no, there doesn't seem to be any piece of good news that's balancing out the horrible news. I read the transcript for that, of the tape of transcript. Now, there's where I've been ragging everybody else not to look at transcripts. They actually listen to the tape, which I probably should. But actually, it's a video, right?
Yeah.
Now, how did that get out?
Good question. I haven't dug into the, you know, provenance of that, so I'd be interested to find out more about it. And you got the New York Times leak on the Bolton book and all that that's come out. And of course, any time I hear Bolton's name attached to something, I start to think there's something fishy about it. But this is an unpublished manuscript that's flat out that the withholding of aid to Ukraine was solely to get back at Biden, which, coming from somebody with Bolton's credentials, you know, I would want corroboration of that from a lot of people, because I think it's easy to put that in a book manuscript and not have it vetted and then have the New York Times leak it, which is kind of typical how the New York Times and other papers have treated Trump and all this.
We just got an email from our buddy David Parks. There was a 1975 Marshall football team. I'd remember that. We were just out of school, John. Went down in a plane crash.
Oh, yeah. Right, right.
The only thing weird about... I don't want to get this to Trump with so much other stuff to talk about today. It's the only thing weird about... I mean, I'm not going to argue that you need to have stuff like that vetted. But this is the first time I've ever seen a situation in my lifetime where 90% of what the person is accused of saying that people are defending him for, he's the one that actually said it. I mean, in bold print, most of them are there. They're tweets. It's like, you know, I've never seen anything quite like where, I mean, I can't imagine you, John, or me, or Maddie, or Kevin, or anybody else on the show just saying like really stupid crap and having two people following you around afterward and say that's not really what he meant. And you're supposed to believe the person afterward rather than the person.
Well, it's like his style is to, you know, deal in Twitter and to say the outrageous rather than the measured and the statesmanlike. There's nothing unusual about that. And he's the first president who has pretty much governed by Twitter, really, I think. And
yeah.
Again, this is not my style. I wish he didn't do that. But I have to say, on the other hand, it's been the key to his success. But it carries all sorts of risks associated with it, that you're constantly talking. And you're not only that, but you're doing it in print. And there's records of it, and people can look at it and respond to it and parse it and, you know, poke around in it. And I just think you're leaving yourself open to whatever kind of misinterpretation. Or flat out, this is what it says, and why did you say that? And it becomes, you know, a source of embarrassment for anybody who traffics in that as frequently as he does. So, if there were one thing I would hope for, it would be, you know, tone that down. But it's not going to happen.
Well, I mean, it seems like, I mean, I happen to be, as scary as it may be, I'm on the side that I don't necessarily think the Ukraine is abominable as he handled it. I don't think that that's a reason to toss somebody out 6 months before an election. I mean, I think that's pretty much a waste of time. That's, I mean, earlier in the career, over the 4 years, yeah, but the decision is so close to the election now, what's the point? For anybody on the Republican side, I mean, to not listen to what the man said himself and realize that he obviously was holding up something, whether it's legal or illegal, somebody could drag out some law that says, you know, he gets God knows what. It's not something I would think about doing. He basically held up money for some place to go after a political guy, and when the ambassador didn't like it, he wanted her fired. I mean, that is absolutely the man's own quotations. You know, and I don't need Kellyanne apologist Conway at the bottom of the driveway tell me it isn't true. I've heard it from the guy, right? And I heard it again in this tape. Now, again,
I could barely watch, you know, 30 seconds of any of the Democrats' case last week. I watched some of the two-hour presentation on Saturday, and I was really struck by how when they showed the redactions that the Democrats had made in Trump's conversation, where they couldn't even report the transcript accurately in the Senate. They were the stuff they omitted that was read back into it, and they were shown on, you know, PowerPoint displays for everybody in the chamber. That it was all about what Schiff and company had kept from the Senate. That it was about the way other allies have treated Ukraine. It was not just about Biden at all, and that was the slant that had been put on it for the last 3 days. And I think within, you know, the first half hour of watching that, I thought, well, the Democrats have zero case. Even if all of the things he said did occur in just that way. You fill in the blanks with what they didn't let you see, and it looks like completely meaningless impeachment.
John, I'm not choosing sides. I'm just saying everything in the man's personality tells me he wouldn't hesitate to do this. And if the ambassador said it's not proper, he wouldn't hesitate to get rid of her. There's nothing in the man's
perfectly within his rights to do that. And Obama did it left and right in the military and in the State Department, and nobody said word one about it.
Well, but so, I mean, maybe because one person was more secretive about it, and one puts it right in your face. I mean, I don't want people that are competent being fired because they won't get along with some stupid scheme of his. You know, I mean,
I think what's come out, and I think the whole thing with Yovanovitch and Vindman and those testimony, the ridiculous charade before, that they were clearly just running a counter operation to Trump's foreign policy, and no employee of the government gets the right to pick and choose what they're going to support and what they're going to sabotage, and that's all that was about. Yovanovitch was clearly somebody who should be canned, and you know, however, you know, Trump phrased it or whatever else. Nothing wrong with that in my book. That was a good move on his part, and he probably should have done it sooner than he did.
Yeah, but I guess what I'm saying, John, is you can't. I don't know. I worked in manufacturing places, and I mean, if all of a sudden you get a guy to run the plant and doesn't know a clear thing about what he's doing, and starts changing things on a railroad car that you kind of know are dangerous. I mean, we're talking about somebody what's good for him is what's good for the world. We've never had we probably had big morons in the government before, Lyndon Johnson being one of them. You know, as crass as all get out, and I'm certainly no fan of half of these people. But here's a guy who's absolutely incompetent when it comes to foreign policy. He's incompetent in a lot of other ways. I mean, you're not going to let him design the F-35, yet he thinks he's capable of it. I mean, at some point you got to say, wait a minute. I mean, most people have a filter. If you plunk me in the Oval Office, I'll tell you what, I want you by my side talking about anything I do legally, because I don't know anything about it. I'm not a lawyer. I think I could probably handle how I'd want to straighten out the SEC in that area myself, because I'm pretty good at that. When it starts talking about foreign people, I better get a guy like Lou in here, because I don't know any of these people. But here's a man, you could talk to him about making pottery. And he walks in the place, and in his mind, he's an expert. I mean, it's
that's the power the president has. It may be probably a defect in the executive system, but it's worse than that scenario to have people like Schiff and Nadler saying that the public doesn't know enough about who to vote for to make the right decision in an election, which is kind of what they've been saying all along about 2016 and what they're afraid of happening again in 2020. That's much worse in my book than a president who overreaches or bumbles around in areas where he isn't an expert.
By the way, you know, he's got the same idea of this as Netanyahu. The idea the whole point of impeachment, okay, and I'll piss all over the Republicans on this one, not you personally, but, you know, but it's... The whole idea of impeachment is people elect somebody, they have a campaign, they elect what they think they're electing, okay? Whoever it may be, you know, it could be a good person, bad person, and you're getting this out of the campaign. The idea of impeachment is if somebody, and again, I am not for this impeachment, I'll stand on that. This is not, to me, the right idea right now. We should be worried about the election and all the other stuff going on in the world. Hell, we could all be dead with this virus. Hopefully not. Which I guess, you know, I guess maybe that'd be mute if we're all dead, right? But the whole idea of impeachment, the Republican angle, and I get this from my guys once an hour from my Republican people, you're going against the will of the people. Bull bleep. The whole idea is if somebody gets in office and starts pulling some crap that you're not supposed to do, there's a way to get them the hell out of there. And it should be used exceptionally sparingly and only when really needed. But the idea that no matter what the guy does, you're going against the will of people that, by the way, didn't even win the general election 4 years ago, that no matter what he does in the next 4 years is okay. That is the dumbest argument I've ever heard. It's the same thing, that's the same thing the guy's using in Israel. And the guy's, what they actually got him in corruption where he's taking money, right? Netanyahu? Well, they're going against the will of the people. The people didn't know you were corrupt, you idiot, right? It was found afterward. Where am I wrong with this?
Well, the whole, if this had been one or two, or or a couple more Republicans on the side of the Democrats in this, which was clearly the case with Nixon and with Clinton, too, that it wasn't party that was determining how you felt about it. It was the observable performance of some public official that had just crossed so many lines you couldn't let him have another crack at another day in the office, and the sooner you get rid of him, the better. And I've just never felt at all that we've been in that kind of dire situation with Trump. And, you know, I had this conversation years ago during the Gray Davis mess in California and the push for recall votes, you know, when the tide turned against some public official and there'd be a recall vote to undo an election and vote the person out. I was really afraid of that kind of alternative, because that didn't mean the person had done anything wrong. He had just began to lose, you know, his public image, or people began to get sour about him. And that happens all the time after elections. No elected official ever does things exactly according to
John, what do you say we continue this after the break? Because the idea that he actually threatens people and those kinds of things, I think these Republicans are absolutely cowered by the guy. And what he talked about Schiff the other day is every bit as bad as, will somebody rid me of this meddlesome priest? Oh, my God, you killed him. What's the matter with you people? I mean, he's to me, he's right at that spot.
We'll also give the answer on the MVP
yes,
list.
Yes, because you're still down 47. If anything, we're going the wrong way here. We keep thinking we'll talk about something else, the market will come up, but it ain't happening. NASDAQ futures down 163. That's unbelievable. I got Apple almost down $7. We'll be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice-weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456, or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hi, This is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at ptisecurities.com or feel free to email me at john@ptisecurities.com. That's john@ptisecurities.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Something happening here.
Welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. Santa Mali, Mr. Man, Webber, aboard. It was an argumentative Jan Flanagan on the phone with us today. S&P futures down 48. The NASDAQ futures down 164. I think he's mad because he bought it to Tripoli the other night, and now he's probably regretting it or something. I don't know.
That was money well spent, Tom, don't you?
So, by the way, Chief, before you guys get back into the discussion, I was able to confirm that my stat was correct.
Really?
Yes, Kobe Bryant is the third ever NBA MVP to have died, dating back to 1955-56 season. That's when they began giving out that award. Bob Pettit was the first winner. He's still alive at age 87. Bob Cousy is still alive at age 91.
Wow. Oh.
Bill Russell still alive at 85. Wilt passed away. Oscar Robertson is still alive at 81. Wes Unseld is still alive at 73. Willis Reed is still alive at 77. Dave Collins is still alive at 71. Bob McAdoo is 68. Bill Walton, 67. And then people start getting younger and younger, obviously. The only three to have died are Wilt, Moses Malone, and now Kobe.
And Wilt died young. Well, he wasn't 41, but he was fairly young.
Yeah, and Moses Malone died fairly young. I mean,
was he an accident or he natural causes?
Moses Malone died, let me find out. He was 60 years old when he died.
Wow.
Yeah. And then let me see how old Wilt was.
Well, didn't Wilt go to the dentist for some work and died of a prolapse valve when he got back to his house or something?
Wasn't it was shortly after he had been to the dentist, I think.
Wilt was 63 when he died.
For a while, and I don't know if they do this anymore. My mom used to do this before she went and got her teeth cleaned. They would give her antibiotics for because it can jam some bacteria into your system. I'm no doctor, but and it can. And if you have a bad heart valve or not the best heart valve, it can cause you a heart attack or something. Is there something bizarre about that, John? Or used to give people
antibiotics? I remember thinking at the time that this shouldn't happen. I mean, this is not. It sounded like a routine procedure. And I was stunned when I found out that he had just had what I was a normal thing. I never studied it more than that, but at the time it seemed like it was a freak accident of some kind.
Yeah, I remember my mom. I said, "What are you taking antibiotics for?" She goes, "I'm going to the dentist on Friday." I'm going, "What's one got to do with it? I don't know. They want me to take antibiotics before I go because they have a prolapse valve or something, whatever the hell that is." Weird. Wow. But anyway, but Wilt's that's. Wilt died coming right home from the dentist.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Isn't that an unbelievable stat, though? It's just kind of eerie. That I mean, you've talked about kind of everyone sort of being floored by the news yesterday, and it's just one of those things where professional sports legends just don't die.
Like in football, they do.
Well, yeah, in football they do, but in basketball, they just don't die this young. NBA MVPs seemingly just don't die at all.
Well, you know what I was surprised
in the last 80 years.
Despite, and it's been this, my enthusiasm on this has been tempered by the fairly horrible death of Stan Mikita, and clearly a major Chicago favorite. And he was really, really messed up for a long time. And didn't he, this is not for polite radio, didn't his brain just come back from the place in Boston? They said he had a serious, serious case of that, what do you call it, Matty?
CTE.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do remember that.
And
he just died 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And less than a year and a half ago.
There was a Hawk, you know, get-together of all those old guys. God, most of them looked pretty good. Even the goalie who played without the mask.
Tony O?
Oh, Glenn Hall.
Oh.
He's still around.
Yeah.
And then Red Hay and those guys, and I think Nestor was there. Bobby Hull looks the worst because he likes to drink more than the rest of them probably, but Bobby likes his booze. But, but I mean, most of them look, and then we're talking about guys from the 63 team that, you know, were playing without helmets. And, you know, the fights and the amount of stitches, and most of them look better now than they did when they were playing. They all got teeth now. Those guys never, when they played, man, they never had any teeth in their mouth. They always took the false teeth out.
Yes.
Ugh. Anyway, so a lot of stuff going on here, Jan. What is interesting to me is how, you know, some people will say, well, I mean, and again, you're a Southside dude. So beneath all this Republican rhetoric, I know that you'd be as vindictive as me if somebody went after our parents or us on the stand or started talking about how we sweat too much and everything. There's no coming back from that, from this guy. The idea that everybody should be nice to him. I mean, why should the press be nice to a guy who does nothing but say how they're public enemy number one? I mean, why would we ever be do anything rather than trying to? I'd be letting the air out of presidential limousine tires every time the guy got in it.
Well, you know what you were saying before the break, though, about, you know, the Republicans being cowed by him. It's in a certain way that is true, but that's always been the case with a strong president who either has a track record with the politicians underneath him, like going back in the Senate, as somebody like Harry Truman did, or LBJ. He knew a lot of the people who were still in the Senate when he was president. He could call in favors. He could run roughshod on them, and he had long coattails, you know, when he was running for re-election that everybody was, you know, happy to ride, and they didn't dare cross him because they knew that he could also destroy them just as he could, you know, keep them alive politically. And to me, the closest parallel to Trump is somebody like Ronald Reagan, who came completely out of left field, not from a political background, had, you know, but he had tons of political connections, more than Reagan did, because of his business connections. And he also was a strong figure, whereas Reagan was sort of a hands-off, happy-go-lucky, not deeply involved, I don't think, in a lot of stuff, but he had a certain charisma that appealed to people, and people wanted to be seen with him, have their picture taken with him, but they really didn't, you know, I don't think, fear him. And he was not the kind of person who wielded power in a visible or, you know, ruthless way. Trump is those things, though. And to his credit, I think a political party benefits from having somebody like that at the top. Whether he's the best qualified to wield that power or not, that's a luxury we don't often
John,
have.
I mean, but
look at the Democrats. I mean, the Democrats are, it's a circular firing squad.
Sure it is.
They're all trying to deep six each other, and who is the worst among the bunch? I mean, you've got Hillary now launching another documentary about herself. I mean, what's the timing of that all about?
Well, Hillary's a despicable human being. So, but she's not my Democrat. I mean, well, my point, John, is, and I don't think anybody, and you understand this, nobody ever used the subtle use of power more than Mayor Daley won. Right.
Oh, yeah.
Without question.
If Maddie, and kept himself clean.
But if Manny Weber was an alderman that was, I'll use the term, misbehaving, he would, behind the scenes, make sure that he wasn't on the right committee. I'm not saying this is right. Okay, but he would do things politically where Manny knew he just got slapped upside the head. But to me, especially in this day and age where we seem to have issues with guns and people that don't seem to know what in God's name they're doing, you don't call people out personally and say they're bad. I mean, you don't tell Maddie's ward basically that if he didn't live anymore, the world would be better. I mean, in so many words, nobody's ever been that stupid except this guy. In my mind, he calls out. I mean, one of these days, God, I hope I don't want to say it. I mean, if all of a sudden something happens one of these days, like Thomas Beckett, he's going to say he's totally faultless. And you know what, Jan? He's not. Because you can't say that stuff in today's world when, you know, everybody's armed. Half the people are nuts. They just lost their job or whatever. Not nuts, but are under amazing amount of economic stress. You don't do that to people. Those people are statesmen.
You know, but here's the thing. I think this has always been Trump's style. He does not initiate fights. He doesn't fire the first salvo in really anything.
In his mind.
But think about it. I mean, the people who have... You know, the stuff he has taken from people like Kathy Griffin and Jim Carrey and all these kind of two-bit has-been actors who were pontificating about him, Robert De Niro and all these people trying to resuscitate their career by, you know, practically hurling assassination threats at him. Trump isn't going to sit back and take
but
that.
But, Jan, this has been politics in this country since day one. If you don't want... Your face, your nice face, to be all of a sudden sit there with some satirist where every week Tricky Dick's ears got bigger and his nose got bigger. If you don't want that happening, you don't run for president.
I'm not saying Trump does not go looking for trouble.
Well, I mean, but I mean, it depends
you know,
on
he, he's perfectly, he's got his agenda pretty clear in his mind, and you can get with the program or you can grouse about it or you can obstruct him.
I think you're giving
but he's not going to publicly humiliate or castigate anybody until they do it to him, and then he fires back, you know, double power. And I don't fault him for that. I think that, you know,
you honestly think
supposed to sit back and be insulted.
But this is part of that job.
To take abuse,
to take political satire, to take criticism.
Not satire, Tom. These are just out and out threats. You know, Kathy Griffin holding up the decapitated head of Trump. I mean,
saying this is like the Irish and the Catholics and the Protestants trying to figure out who the first shot. Now, we knew people in high school and in college, maybe not so much in college, but certainly in grammar school. Most people in our day, you know, probably got into at least somewhat of a shoving match fist fight. You know, once every couple of years, maybe, right? And just on the way home from school, because everybody's tumbling along together at age 10. But all of a sudden, somebody is three times a week, and you're supposed to believe that every single time it was the other guy's fault. You know, how is it? I mean, I would say, Jan, starting with the debates, those people didn't insult him first. When he was on the stage with eight people, he didn't start talking about somebody having small hands, and you know what he really meant. That guy didn't say anything. The guy from Florida about Trump's stupid hair. I mean, nobody. He was absolutely number one on every one of those insults in every debate I saw. So the idea that he only returns fire, I don't know. Boy, oh boy, bring some of that oatmeal you're down. And I want some of it. Just saying.
Well, what has always struck me about Trump from day one is that nobody ever took him seriously as a candidate at all.
Right. Or
this is something that has never gone down with some people.
They wouldn't let him in the
NBA. As far as he has.
Well, Jan, they wouldn't let him in the NBA. Was it the NBA, Matty? What was the league that they wouldn't let him buy a team in?
It was the NFL.
Well, that is a remark against him, though.
But I'm saying I'm trying to seriously agree with you here for the first time in the show. Yes, he feels like he's been an outcast from this group, so he's going to insult his way in. Basic. Well, not, but he carries a grudge, and you know what? So would we. So, I guess I'm not.
He knows who his friends are, and he knows who his enemies are, and that's why he's successful, you know, in business. And he's run roughshod over the people who have crossed him, or, you know.
Jan, he has run roughshod of people who were weaker than him, and then he could intimidate. I can name you five people.
That's the story of, you know, presidential politics from the get-go.
I'm talking about not paying the painter.
Some people did it with white gloves. Some people.
No, I'm talking about
off.
Not paying
some people have done it with, you know, insults.
I'm talking about not paying.
With God knows, you know, what other unspeakable acts, but it's never been where a nice guy has gotten elected to that office uncommitted to an agenda that's going to require him to be.
I'm going to say that if
and I think Trump's so exposed in this way that it just becomes another way for people to say he has no business being president. But we're holding him to a standard we haven't held other presidents.
I would, as soon as Hillary got the trades in her account that weren't hers, she got no business being coyote catcher, as far as I'm concerned. And as soon as I talked to people that said Trump stiffed them on work he did at their place, even though he said it was good. Matter of fact, the guy here that did the painting at Trump Tower never got paid. That guy, if you don't pay people that did good work for you, and just say, screw you, sue me, that guy, in my mind, has no business being coyote catcher, much less president. It has nothing to do with the latest politics versus Schiff. I couldn't vote for either one of those people if they were the only two people on earth, because of they're over my line of what I want in that job. Because you know what? Those kinds of leopards don't change their spots, Jen. And there's a little bit of Trump in all of us, and it's not a part in me that I really like all that much. Because I can be vindictive and those kinds of things, but I'm not proud of it.
Forget, you know, wrongs that you've had to endure, and you don't want people to get away with it again at your expense, if you can help it. And we're now in such an ugly mood about all of this with, you know, an impeachment that should have been deep six a long time ago. Instead, it seems to have turned into some way of getting rid of Sanders and Warren for the Democrats. I really think it has nothing to do with Trump anymore at all.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
about making sure that they can keep the, you know, those people occupied, sitting on their hands in the Senate, while Joe Biden goes out and bumbles his way through the next speech, and expecting him to be the nominee because of this. This, to me, is the ultimate cynical impeachment. It has nothing to do with removing the person who's sitting there. It's about making sure that your least competent candidate gets the nomination. And that's just BS. I mean, if you think you had no grounds for impeachment before, put that into the...
Oh, yeah, I don't... I mean, like
who,
I say, this
really running this show?
If I was going to try and impeach the guy, this wouldn't even be number 10 on my reason to get him out of there. I could probably pick up a 9 better, but anyway. But I'm saying, Jan, is that, you know, you get... I mean, once in a while, I'll say something out of the blue, where I'll see somebody that looks like somebody on the trading floor that I thought stiffed me on a trade like 30 years ago, and Audrey goes, "Well, that's quite the memory of people you don't like." I go, "Hey, I'm half Irish. What can I tell you?" I mean, right?
Well, it's like what happened in the state senate not too long ago with Don Harmon, you know, becoming the president over Lightford, and it was purely because of Lightford's vote something like 20 years ago with Emil Jones. You know,
yeah.
She was on the wrong side of a vote, and when push came to shove, they didn't let her forget how she was on the wrong side of that vote. And there's no ifs, ands, or buts about this. These people have long memories. And when
some nationalities worse than others, right?
it shows just how, you know, small politics can be sometimes, and it has nothing to do with, you know, looking at it dispassionately in the moment. What's the better approach here? It's about calling in favors and reactivating grudges a lot of times. And boy, you know, it frosts you, and it seems like a colossal waste of time. But it is how things are done.
Well, but you have to. I mean, when you go to I used to get out more, shall we say. And I went to this shindig one night. And with some guy opening up his new firm, and it was a minority for whatever. The names don't matter. And there's Madigan's there, and so is Quinn. Right now, Quinn, to his credit, I think was pretty honest and never really used. I don't know if he was the world's best governor. He probably wasn't, but he never really used the state as a leverage for himself. He didn't really believe that I give away other people's money to make people pay homage to me, which is the way most politicians get their support, right? They're going to give you other people's money and you support them. I mean, duh. That's the deal. Well, Madigan had all kinds of people talking to him. Quinn was talking to me. I felt like I should go talk to the guy because nobody was talking to him. Like, you know, he was almost embarrassed. But people, what's the point? You're not getting anything out of him, right?
Right, he always was kind of on the fringes of the Democratic Party. He was like a Bernie Sanders in a way. He really never had a close association
with the people at the center of the power, and he was always viewed as a gadfly, I think, by the insiders. And, you know, when he sort of in an unlikely path after Blagojevich was impeached, became governor, it's kind of the culmination of a very unusual career in state politics, because he never was the kind of charismatic figure that had a deep following. He was always there as a kind of check on the machine, and yet, you know, I think too he was a fairly honest person, better than Blagojevich, as it turns out. But you know, that's a curious case, and things had gotten so low with the Democrats after Blagojevich that it was now Quinn's turn, and there really isn't anybody quite like Quinn now, I don't think.
No, well, he's still frying around.
The position of being sort of in the wings, waiting for an opportunity, and always running and never getting very far. I can't think of somebody who's in that spot today.
Well, Janet, it becomes a level of a question of level, and I know we're getting kind of far afield here, but it's most things you can't take to the extreme, because if you do, they blow up. I mean, that's why I'm always, you know, basically bitching about the Fed. I don't have any problem if people think the money supply, instead of growing 3.5% like I would like it to grow, if these guys know more than me, they're looking at the numbers and they see something's changed, the velocity might have dropped or something, or more people are bringing money back to the Fed and say we need to grow it at 5 now, which will equal the 3.5% that Milton Friedman talked about. You know, Jen, I can run with that, but don't tell me you're going to run it at 12 to keep the stock market pumped up because you're intimidated by the president. I mean, when you look at politics in Chicago, the University of Chicago, George Stigler said if you really did a study, you might find out that patronage work was more efficient than civil service at some level. You know, if Jan Flanagan, you know, all of a sudden is having a few issues and your dad goes to the alderman and says, geez, you know, my son Jan, he'll always show up for work, but he's not the brightest, you know, he's not the sharpest knife in the drawer. And all of a sudden you get a job, you know, doing something for the Secretary of State, processing, you know, whatever, licenses or something you can handle, or you're a bridge tender or you're something. I mean, it didn't hurt anybody, Jan. You're going to go and you're going to do it. It's not a job. It's not a job that it's off the chart where you're not making $100,000 a year. It's a subsistence living. It's a favor. And guess what? You're always going to show up because your dad, because your dad will kill you if you didn't, right? So you're always going to be there. It's kind of like no harm, no foul. It's almost like you're employer of last resort. But when everybody else was working at a factory and making more money, they didn't care if you got that job, right? I mean, somebody went to the alderman, and everybody who had 5 kids had one kid that didn't do as good as the other 4, right? That's just the way families are. And if I can help the kid along, I'll help him along. I mean, my stepfather helped me when I got the job as the janitor at the Chicago Board of Education. And I only got it because his brother-in-law was a big shot there. And they didn't even use his name. I used another guy's name. But you know what? For 6 years, I was probably the best janitor they had. I never didn't show up. They gave me responsibilities. I was a sub, and I was opening the place in the morning. You know, but now you reach a point where Trump likes Tim Cook, so he's going to give them a buy on the tariff because he likes the company. There's 1,000 companies that are affected by this tariff. If the other 999 people walk in and have a conversation with their story is going to be just as good. But you're only going to talk to one guy and based. I mean, this is stuff. This is way over the top of getting you a job as a bridge tender. You know, and we're taking this narcissistic approach that what's good for me, if I like a guy. I mean, even Caesar, I don't think, if he had an income tax, would say, well, John, I like you. You pay 25%. Everybody else paying 35%. I mean, I.
But this is how it's always been, Tom. I mean, there's nothing.
Not on that level. Well, let's put it this way: they never were dumb enough to tell you about it.
No, but look at how ambassadorships are handed out. It's always been that way. It has nothing to do with your language skills or your cosmopolitan eating habits or anything else. It's about how much money you gave to someone.
I get that part, but I also know that the guy you sent over there, he at least had to be able to speak and eat with a fork at the same time. I mean, the guys they sent over for Kenny Construction. I guarantee you that Mr. Kenny was a terrific ambassador to Ireland. Right? I mean, he dressed in a suit. He always had his tie on properly. He said the right things. He was nice to people. But he did a nice job. Now, yes, he got the job because he was Kenny Construction. But it doesn't mean it would be a bad. My point is, we never had a guy who was so brazen to come out and say, I like John Flanagan. He doesn't have to pay any taxes this year. What?
Well, Trump is the unvarnished version.
Right. Well,
what's usually heavily varnished,
yes.
I guess. I will grant you that. There's nothing, to be misread about what he says. But it is, to me, it isn't any different from what's always been going on. So I'm not particularly offended by it. It's the style, maybe, that bothers me more than the substance of it. But it doesn't concern me that this is somehow a collapse in the political system, that this is occurring. It's always been that way. Nothing new about it. It's just we're seeing it in all of its nakedness, and it ain't pretty, but it was always ugly. So, I don't get upset about it.
But real quick, Jeremy, we only have 30, and I'm going to let you go. But the lady in the Ukraine, she has an immense body of work and a body of knowledge of the place that, as a president, I could probably use. Just because she doesn't want to go along with some dumb thing, I'm thinking of.
And the president's entitled to have somebody on his side.
I get that, but
in that job. So,
but I mean, when you throw away that body of work and put, Barney the Bowser in there afterward, and you go, wait a minute, just because this person's loyal, he's incompetent, or he or she. I'm saying there is, you know what I'm talking about. Anyway,
We'll
talk about it. We'll talk about it next week, buddy. You take care of yourself. SP Futures. By the way, Jan, we have not rallied the market at all with our it's not talking about it.
Darn.
So we come back, David Adelman, after the break, and we'll talk nothing but market.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTIsecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTIsecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, Give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Hello, North Bay Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Al. Mr. Matt Weber, we got, man, I think we're on our lows here. S&P futures down 51. NASDAQ futures down 167. I've got, let's see, list of, down stocks. List of down stocks here. There isn't a green light anyway. So the only green lights any place are on the VIX, gold and silver, and the bonds. Every other light here is red. I got Boeing down 5. I got Apple down 7. American Express down 4. I got IBM down 220. JP Morgan down 3. McDonald's down 3. Any stock that has anything to do with people moving someplace. Airlines, they're all down. Everything's down. We're talking about, the people in China, 28% less movement than last year in Lunar New Year. So they're not traveling. So I gotta believe that's gonna take a hit to their economy. Why don't you do traffic, weather, sports, since my computer is dying on me here.
I can do that. 35 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Off to a good start on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways here for a Monday morning. Dry conditions are helping with that. But no issues coming in on the Edens or Kennedy. Normal traffic volumes there. Same for the Eisenhower and Stevenson. Southside expressways have looked good all morning, so we're off to a pretty quiet start as far as accidents and stalls and issues like that are concerned. Just normal traffic volumes building. Out in the suburbs, there are some crashes off the expressways. Roosevelt Road at Gables Boulevard out in the western suburbs, there's a crash. Just north of that in Wheaton, Geneva Road at Gary Avenue, there's an accident. We do have an issue still working on that issue on Grand Avenue eastbound at Lake Street in Elmhurst. That accident is blocking the right lane, and that's been going on for about an hour. Schick Road at County Farm Road, there is a crash. And just north of that in Hanover Park, Ontarioville Road at County Farm Road, there is an accident.
What's with the guys on County Farm Road?
I don't know. Northern suburbs, US 12 at Lake Cook Road, there is a crash too. Weather today, a cloudy, kind of dreary day, but relatively mild temperatures. We'll reach a high of 36, so that'll be nice. Right now it's cloudy and 30 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 74 today. Right now it's partly cloudy and 54. In sports, of course, the big news of the day yesterday was the passing of NBA legend Kobe Bryant, who died in a helicopter crash along with his daughter and 7 others. Kobe was 41. Had an amazing NBA career, 18-time All-Star, 5-time NBA champion, 2-time Finals MVP. Again, he was just 41.
Manny, how many of the 5 championships came with Shaq?
I think 3 with Shaq and then 2 with Pau Gasol.
Pau Gasol was the other guy, that's right.
Yeah. Suns were in action. They lost to the Grizzlies 114-109. Bulls were off. Loyola lost at Northern Iowa in College Hoops 67-62 in overtime. And Northwestern with a loss at home versus Ohio State 71-59.
Did Shaq won his other one down in Miami, right?
With Dwayne Wade, yep.
But he was
that was the twilight of Shaq's career. He was solid, like in short spurts that season, but still a big part of that. But that was Dwayne Wade's team.
LeBron wasn't on it, was he?
No.
So LeBron was after?
LeBron was after, a few years after. LeBron and Chris Bosh came and joined Wade down in Miami.
That's right. But Chris Bosh, is he all right? He had to quit because he had
to retire because of a heart issue. And
but he had a blood clotting problem, right?
Yeah, I think it was. And it was blood clotting. I don't know if it was related to his heart or what it was, but... He had to retire.
Well, we got the Dax down 314.
In his prime, too.
Yeah, we have Dax down 314. We haven't seen that in a while, over 300. That's 2.3%. FTSE down 167. 2.2. CAC around down 136. 2.2. So we've got a worldwide sell. The only That place is not selling off Chinese markets because they're closed. Nikkei, on the other hand, down 483. That's 2%. Bonds going, as you might expect, bonds going up, yields going down. 10-year yield 1.61, Bund minus 0.37. Still nowhere near as low as the minus 0.79 we spotted at a while ago. Japan minus 0.04. They were actually up, well, barely up for a couple days. Oil, whack, whack, down 147, 52.72. These people are not traveling virtually anywhere. China, anyway. Brent down 157, 59. Natural gas 194, so that's up a little bit, up 5 cents. RBOB 145. And gold also going up, as you might expect, up 10 bucks to 1581. Silver up 15 cents, 1826. So exactly what you would expect on some kind of a big sell-off day like this. And, David, what percentage, how are you, first of all? And,
I'm doing fine.
What percentage of this is, the virus? Maybe we were too high to start with. The tape that came out Saturday, I don't think it was much of the tape. I don't think it could be all that much about Kobe Bryant at the market, but that's a horrible thing no matter what. Where would you put all the percentages here?
I would say the market in general needed, deserved, and just wanted a trigger for a sell-off. All the technicals were grossly extended. There were also divergences. In other words, the price momentum oscillators, believe it or not, even the grind higher, were not making new highs. Market was tired. Didn't act tired, but it was. And you needed some kind of a trigger. Hard to imagine that the technicals, you know, sensed with the loss of momentum, in those price oscillators, that they sensed, you know, coronavirus, but this was the trigger as far as the sell-off. There's no way to gauge. I think it's fear. It's panic. I mean, I'm not minimizing 81 deaths. It's obviously a tragedy and significant. But when you got 8,000 from deaths from regular flu, you know, I think that it's minimal. And, you know, yes, I mean, they're quarantining 65 million people in 70,000 theaters. 16 parks and closing, you know, some McDonald's and Starbucks or whatever. I'm not saying, you know, that there's no effect. There's an effect. And the market's discounting that. But I think, you know, more than, say, another 2%, you know, down, maybe back to 3180 in the March S&P future, unless there's something else, whether it's impeachment or, you know, some other kind of thing, you know, Warren or Bernie winning, you know, Iowa hands down or whatever, I think it's going to take another trigger to get the market more than another 2% lower.
Well, that probably makes sense, especially with the bonds going the other way. I mean,
they're assessing what it could mean to worldwide GDP in comparison to the great epidemic in 1918. I mean, I think medical, you know, innovation and the like is a little bit different than where we were in 1918. I mean, I wasn't around, thank goodness. But
do yourself a favor.
This is panic.
Do yourself a favor.
And I'm not going to join this panic, that's for sure. I'm not going to buy it necessarily today, tomorrow, you know, or even the end of the week. But if you show me another 2% down, I'm going to start getting interested.
Last week I was digging into, and some this weekend, about the 1918 flu fiasco, and Don't read that if you want to have a nice day. It was bad.
Oh, they were talking about it. They spent 20 minutes on CNBC today.
What'd they say?
I forget, even in those days, that cost the world economies $4 trillion or some kind of thing like that.
3 to 5% of people died.
Yeah, it was unbelievable.
Plus,
if you multiply what the world economies are now compared to then. Yeah, you can get some ferocious numbers.
Well, the scary part is tonight, if we had a doctor, if from what I understand from a couple of friends I have that are nurses, hospitals here have been pretty jammed with regular flu victims. It's been a pretty nasty year to start with. I don't know if the shot.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if the shots hit any of the strains that are landing up. You know, maybe they didn't. So if somebody walks in, why? With this flu versus another flu, unless you know they were from China, can you even tell the difference?
Yeah, I went over the weekend to Costco for a flu shot, and literally they had, you know, senior shots. I don't know what the mix is. They had senior shots.
Don't do
they
that.
Said that when this broke out, that every other shot, they had four different mixes, and the other three disappeared.
Senior shot evidently is a double dose. We have a contributor to the show. There was like a double dose, and somehow he ended up with a triple dose.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, when he passed out on the sidewalk.
Did he have a reaction?
Yeah, he passed out on the sidewalk walking out of the place.
Oh,
so, yeah. Yes, yeah, so he had a reaction. So a big one. We'll let him tell us about it when he comes back on.
Speaking of pharmacies, you know, this will play right into our inflation discussion from the last 3 or 4 years. I went for a monthly medication, you know, just a stability type of thing, you know, whatever. Nothing, you know, serious or threatening or whatever, but just something that I take, you know, monthly. And the prescription was for 2 years. Same dose, same number, same everything, same, you know, same pharmaceutical maker, whatever. Nothing has changed. $34 to $36 a month for 60 tablets. So CVS shoots it up, you know, for the credit card, $69.90.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I said, how did this go? He says, well, I don't know. This is, you know, what with your co-insurance. I said, this with the co-insurance, it doubled overnight. I said, print out, you know, what I've paid for it in the last 2 years. So he prints it out, and every single month was, I don't know why the variation, but between $34 and $36. Dollar, $2 I can handle. I said, why did this double? Oh, I don't know.
Everything this year, every big major drug company raised the prices in this January. So, Matty, maybe what...
I said, you know what? Keep it. I don't need it that bad.
So why do you think... David gets 60 Viagras a month, but he only uses one.
No, you don't know that.
Is that enthusiasm or foresight or what are we...
a lot of enthusiasm, but not much results.
Oh, God. First question about the 1918 virus, why is it known forever as the Spanish flu when it started in Kansas?
I have no idea.
It's interesting, man. Yeah, when the facts conflict with the fable, print the fable. But you know what was the scariest thing? And I'll bet, I won't say this. I'm going to say my gut feel is that on CNBC they didn't tell the whole story. And you know what the story was about that flu that was so deadly, David? Is it when it came through twice. It came through once and it was known as the 3-day fever. It was pretty much like a regular... You know,
now, this was 1918?
Yeah, it was kind of a regular, I use the term, regular nasty-ass flu. 3 days, everybody was down, you had a big fever, and then you were over it. Somehow the thing mutated and came back through. And most flus are upper respiratory, and when it came back through, it was both. So people, it affected people, when I say affected, the fatalities were mostly people that were younger and stronger, because it created such a response to your internal defenses that you, what happens if you get something in your lung and it's not supposed to be there, your body wants to send fluid to the lung to wash it out, basically, so you cough it up, right?
Right.
Well, there was such a response that people were essentially drowning. So there were army bases where the guys are, you know, 20, 25 years old, 18. They blew through there and they had 1,600 cases like in a day. And, a lot of them died. Yet if you were older or younger, you had a much better chance, just like most, you know, obviously most things, you worry about the old people and the young people, right? Not the people that are 30, they usually can survive. But
right.
this was exactly the opposite. And it just, I mean, and I don't know.
Well, I guess that's what makes it, they had Johnson & Johnson on, and they had, you know, a couple biotechs on this morning. And I guess the issue is, you know, each strain mutates differently,
right.
And that's why, you know, if you're trying to come up with a vaccine or some, you know, other kind of thing to flush it out, you don't know how this particular strain, I mean, unless it's, you know, you have histories of it, you know, in the past, you don't know how this particular strain is going to mutate.
Well, it's not just the mutation. It's almost like a mathematical thing. If you get, you know, Ebola from a monkey, all right? Remember the movie with Tom Clancy novel. And all of a sudden, you're toast, right? And Matty Weber's hanging right next to you, and somehow or another, you know, you sneeze, and that gets in his eye or whatever. And now he's got it, and he's probably toast. But maybe not as fast. Now, but in some of these things, your immune system is beat up on this thing. And so is Matty, even though it's only been there a couple of days before you croaked. Maybe it's only by the third or fourth person, it's not fatal anymore. But what happened with this 1918 thing, when it came back through again, it mutated to the spot where where it was overwhelming everybody, like instantly. So, but most of the time it doesn't do that. It wants to weaken. My question is, how do these things ever disappear? I mean, if that exact same virus, 1918, would, and where did it go? Obviously, if the weather gets warmer, it comes summertime, people are outside, maybe it can't handle the heat, or maybe it can't handle the cold. I mean, where do they go? I mean, you think, why would they ever disappear and not be around? I mean,
who knows?
I
don't know then. I mean, maybe they become dormant, maybe like you say. I mean, just total guess, know nothing about anything as far as medicine, whatever. My guess would be that it's an organism that is mutating and whatever. And I would think that either extreme heat or more likely extreme cold, you know, would either kill it or just make it go dormant. But that's a pure guess.
Well, I've tried to ask Matty Weber to research this. Take a place like Cabrini Green, for instance. Now, you know what a place was totally infested in cockroaches. You knock the places down. What happens to all the cockroaches? They crawl to the next neighborhood, or they die, or what? Just saying. Maybe we don't want to know. All right, so David, when you look at the stocks, obviously the S&P futures, this is a perfect time to talk about it. I mean, when a future is down 49 points, which isn't very often, or if they're up 49 points, which is less often, everybody that can is going to buy the futures down there, and if you have the capability, if you're a person that does this for a living, an arbitrageur, you're going to buy the futures and look at the individual stocks, and you're going to sell the individual stocks, and if you can lock that in for a price. So nobody cares at this point whether J.P. Morgan, McDonald's is a good company, bad company. Whatever percentage it is of whatever your basket is, you're selling it. You don't care, right? So that's up to somebody like you or me managing for people and saying, well, you know what? For some reason, we got Exxon down 90 cents. Well, you know, and well, we got Goldman Sachs down 531. We've got Boeing down 520. We got Apple, which was down 7, down 660. Somehow, there's a greater concern for those stocks because they're down more than the percentage you would guess they would be down, right? So now, now the point here is, is there a stock here that's not affected at all about this? I can't exactly think of one. I mean, maybe Pfizer. If anything, Pfizer might do better with this, you know?
Right. Well, or Johnson, they're talking about a vaccine, although it'd take 6 months to a year. So by then, either everybody will be dead or the virus will be dead. But, you know, AbbVie is one. And in full disclosure, I own a few hundred shares. But they're developing vaccine, and that's a stock that's been hit, you know, on strength for whatever reason. But it's a high quality company with a little bit of a dividend, and the price momentum oscillators are extreme. And I mean that's one that might be in a good spot. Otherwise, you really have to think through. You know, a stock maybe like Delta, even though they're in the travel business, you know, they have, 3% of their travel goes to and from China, and they have no 737 MAXs at all. So, I mean, you know, on a lot of weakness, all of a sudden you see I wouldn't buy it 5% down from the highs, 10%, but if you get it 20, 25% down, and it's been overly discounted because it's in a bad neighborhood, you know, they don't face the same risk as a United or an American or whatever, but you really have to pick and choose. In general, I think, as I said, if you get the S&P future down around 3180, the last cycle low, if there's no other triggers like impeachment or you know, Bernie Sanders or something like that, then you know, you start getting interested, and that's where you want to be selective.
Well, here you've got, just as you're talking about airlines, we got United Airlines down 310, which is 3.8%. Okay, we got American Airlines down 122, which is 4.4%. So those would be probably some of the bigger ones. Right. JetBlue, I've only got down 2.1%, 44 cents. And Southwest Air is down 2.1 over only $1.20. So you would see that there is some movement in there. They're not all down the same percentages, because out of those five, I would say that JetBlue and Southwest Air would be least affected. Now, that doesn't mean that if all of a sudden the thing lands here in the middle of the country, then I might say Southwest Air might be the most affected. You know, but it hasn't happened yet. So within these percentages, I mean, even in the Dow, the biggest, I'm just going to scan down them here, but I've got actually 3M now is up. I don't know what that just happened. But I've got Caterpillar down 2.69. That looks to me to be the lowest. No, I got Nike down 3. And I've got, that's it. Those are the ones in the Dow that are down the most.
I'm looking at Delta, and it's down, what, about 2.5% roughly? Got a PE of 8, yield of 2.7%, and a price to book at 2.4. Again, I own a little, full disclosure, a few hundred shares, nothing significant. But you get that down, say, another 3-4%, maybe around, you know, 54, something like that, 53, you know, it becomes interesting.
Well, the concern I have, David, is that, as you know, I've been talking about this for a while, is that when you have a market that's up this much, basically, on Fed antics, I mean, when you're up, you know, 30% in 2 years, and I'm not going to compare you to one of the talking heads, but the idea that the correction can only be 4%. Wait a minute. We're just up 30.
I mean, no, okay, it can be 20% easily.
So, I mean, I don't necessarily think that, and from what I see on this particular coronavirus, because of the, it doesn't seem like, right now, I'm going to say if it stays just the way it is without, well, the death toll is up to 81, so it's starting to get,
It was 25, 26, you know, the end of last week.
So, yeah, no, I mean, it's getting up there.
Tripled. I mean, I'm not saying it's nothing. It's something.
Yeah. I wouldn't put it in the class of 1918, but then I wouldn't put that any problem the first time through either, and it came through a second time. So, I mean, these things are all, I mean, when you start talking about them, they're like random events. It's like you have no idea what's going to happen. You just hope for the best and hope for a vaccine.
Right. The swine. Well, and the problem with that is, I mean, like I said, you had AbbVie on today, you had Johnson & Johnson on today, and they're talking like, oh, well, you know, we think we can not only develop it, test it, and rush it through and get it approved and blah, 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 but we can make 300 million vaccines. Well, one, that may not be enough, but they're talking anywhere from 6 months to a year. By that time, like I said, they'll either be millions dead, or it'll be obliterated, and they won't need those vaccines.
Manny, would you mind, since you're great at this, see how long it took for the swine flu virus vaccine, for them to have a vaccine? Was that a year, David? I can't remember. I remember it was Jerry Ford was president, and they wanted everybody to take it, and I think I ended up taking the shot.
Well, remember even more recently the Ebola. Ebola.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it took months and months and months and months. Then they finally had it. Then they couldn't get it to Africa where they really needed it. And by the time they really had it and scaled it and got it to where it needed it to be, it was there. It's still there. But it wasn't anywhere near the scale that it had been. So everyone either died or got cured or whatever. But the need, by the time they got it there, was no longer a need.
Well, I have a real stupid question regarding these masks. Actually, two. If you pull the mask down and you smoke a cigarette, does that block the virus, the smoke from the cigarette? Could you see that in China?
I doubt it.
Or I could see where if somebody has the disease, they can't give it to you with the mask. But aren't your eyes just as equally absorbent as your mouth when it comes to if something's in the air? How does a mask protect that?
I would think so because, I mean, just your eyes. You have sinuses around your eyes. Yeah. You know, just because you're protecting your nose and your throat, you know, you're going to ingest it through your skin, and you have sinuses all around your eyes. Unless you cover your eyes as well, and then the rest of the skin around your head, I mean, you know, and then your gloves and whatever really, really cover yourself. Maybe in a bodysuit, there's always going to be something exposed.
So then what if you walk out, since you covered your eyes, you walk out in front of a bus? That doesn't help. Manny, have you noticed people on the train wearing the masks?
No. The swine flu pandemic, according to the internet, says it lasted from April 2009 through August 10th, 2010. 201,000 fatalities.
Really? Well, how many?
So that's a lot of fatalities. I didn't realize
number.
That many.
Well, how many people? I'm going to guess just regular old flu. There's no such thing, but in a normal flu season in the U.S., how many people die? I'm going to say 55,000.
Could be. I don't know.
It's not like it's 10, you know, 10 people. It's
no,
a lot.
No, it's serious.
David, so what do you think? Another how much down? We haven't had an uptick all morning. We're down 50 now.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the quote-unquote bargain hunters, which I don't think it's a bargain, will try and, you know, rally it a little bit. But, you know, I think 10, 15 handles, you know, if you're a quick short-term trader and just looking for a trade, you know, it can probably sell it, but... Again, I really don't think that right now, without another trigger, there's more than another 2% downside.
Well, I sure hope you're right, buddy. S&P futures down 50-50, NASDAQ futures down 167. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
Hey, guys. What's up, G? Want to go to Tchotchke's, get some coffee?
Oh, it's a little early. I
got to get out of here. I think I'm going to lose it.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.